Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Welcome to our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room, and we're following two major breaking stories right now. We're standing by for a law enforcement news conference on the death of George Floyd. He's the unarmed African-American man who died in police custody Monday after an officer kneeled on his neck for at least 7 minutes, all of it captured in a truly shocking and gruesome video that led to the firing of four police officers and calls for them to be charged. Also breaking this hour, the U.S. death toll in the coronavirus pandemic has just surpassed 101,000 people, with health officials on alert right now for a spike in cases as most states are expanding their reopening. First, let's go to the breaking news on the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. death toll once again now surpassing 101,000 people. And as states continue to reopen, we're seeing new cases trending up in 16 states. CNN's Nick Watt is joining us right now. He's out in California. Nick, health officials, they are clearly on alert right now for a new spike in cases.
They are. A lot of these reopening plans, Wolf, are designed so that officials can jump on a hotspot if one pops up. Now, we just heard from San Francisco, which has been one of the most cautious cities in this country. Good news for parents. They're saying that schools with modifications, we're looking at maybe mid-August. But sporting events, big live concerts, all of that sort of stuff, they haven't even given a date yet.
This morning in Montgomery, Alabama, there were just two ICU beds unoccupied. COVID-19 cases have more than quadrupled in this county since reopening began across the state.
We can't fast forward to the end of this movie, and we're trying to do that right now in the way we're approaching this process, and I think that's why we're seeing the spikes, not only in Montgomery, but also throughout Alabama.
In every southern state except Florida and Texas, new case counts are climbing nationally, ticking down slowly for now.
As we reopen, if we relax too much and we don't take these physical distancing measures and take the precautions that we can, then we may see this start to go up again, not just in the fall, as there might be a fall wave, but in the next few weeks as well.
The CDC has posted a model predicting an uptick in hospital admissions around June 10th. It also issued new reopening guidelines for employers. Let lots of fresh air in, no communal coffee pots, no handshakes, not even fist bumps. And bad news today for big events. The Boston Marathon, already moved to mid-September, now cancelled. The Wisconsin State Fair, which usually draws over 1 million people, also just cancelled. New York City is still trying to make its mass transit as safe as possible. The city is not quite ready to reopen, but very close.
I think it's time that New Yorkers see their hard work rewarded.
The hope, between 2 and 400,000 New Yorkers could be back at work by maybe mid-June. Since mid-March, more than 40 million Americans have lost their jobs. That's 1 in 4 workers, and reopening won't be the end of that movie either.
Do you hear these corporations now talking about, well, we're going to take this opportunity to restructure. We're going to get lean. You know what that means? That means they're going to lay off workers.
Now, the line we got from the White House this morning is that, yes, the second quarter, we're likely going to see the biggest decline since the Second World War, but the third quarter, we might see the biggest increase since the Second World War. But you know, Wolf, there are a lot of experts out there who say that the impact of this is going to be felt for years. Wolf.
That's the concern, the serious concern indeed. Nick Watt Thank you. Let's go to the White House right now. Our chief White House correspondent, Jim Acosta, is on the scene for us. Jim, we've been hearing a lot from the president, and not all that much, though, about the more than 100,000 American deaths in this pandemic.
That's exactly right, Wolf. The White House is defending President Trump's delayed acknowledgement of the U.S. reaching 100,000 deaths from the coronavirus. The president took hours to respond to the U.S. reaching that milestone, even as he was tweeting about his grievances and other conspiracy theories. The president is attempting to change the subject to his war with Twitter, as White House officials are slamming the social media platform's attempts to fact check Mr. Trump. The president is looking past the pandemic, as administration's sources tell us. He is sidelining his coronavirus task force. The task force, one administration official told us, that public health experts on the task force are having fewer meetings and are much less visible now. It took more than 12 hours after the U.S. crossed the gut-wrenching milestone of 100,000 deaths from the coronavirus for the president to reflect on the lives lost. Mr. Trump tweeted, "We have just reached a very sad milestone with the coronavirus pandemic deaths reaching 100,000. To all of the families and friends of those who have passed, I want to extend my heartfelt sympathy and love for everything that these great people stood for and represent. God be with you." Asked what took the president so long, White House officials said Mr. Trump marked the milestone before it was reached.
The president recognized that landmark before we even hit it. The president, that was, after all, it was the impetus behind him lowering the flag to half staff. He did that for several days.
Former Vice President Joe Biden posted his own video hours before Mr. Trump.
I think I know what you're feeling. You feel like you're being sucked into a black hole in the middle of your chest. It's suffocating.
At times during the pandemic, the president repeatedly passed along what ended up being false estimates of the death toll in the U.S., from 60,000.
We're talking about maybe 60,000 or so. That's a lot of people, but that's 100,000 was the minimum we thought that we could get to, and we will be lower than that number.
To close to zero.
And again, when you have 15 people, and the 15 within a couple of days is going to be down to close to zero, that's a pretty good job we've done.
The president is making time to stir up debate over the use of masks in public, retweeting a post from a conservative website claiming that masks aren't about public health, but about social control, undermining his own Surgeon General.
As the country begins to reopen, don't forget to wear a cloth face covering when in public.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he'll allow store owners to deny entry to customers who don't wear them.
We're giving the store owners the right to say, if you're not wearing a mask, you can't come in. That store owner has a right to protect themselves. That store owner has a right to protect the other patrons in that store.
As the U.S. hits 100,000 deaths, the White House has sidelined its own coronavirus task force, sharply reducing the number of meetings and news conferences for health experts like Dr. Anthony Fauci, who has contradicted the president on his race to reopen the country.
One of the things that I think the people who are out there frolicking need to realize that when you do that and you see no negative effect in 1 week, please don't be overconfident, because the effect of spreading is not going to be seen for 2, 3, and maybe even more weeks.
The president is trying to change the subject, threatening to take action against social media companies after Twitter added a fact-check label to a tweet on voter fraud.
I guess it's going to be challenged in court. What is it?
The White House suggested that's not necessary, as the president always tries to tell the truth, despite his long history of false and misleading statements.
Are you saying that the president of the United States has never lied to the public before?
I'm around the president. His intent is always to give truthful information to the American people.
White House did weigh in on the unrest in Minneapolis following the killing of George Floyd, who died in police custody, vowing the administration will seek justice.
That was a very, very bad thing that I saw. I saw it last night, and I didn't like it.
Do you think those police officers should be prosecuted?
I'm not going to make any comment right now. I can tell you, I think what I saw was not good, very bad.
Now, as for the mixed signals coming from the White House on the coronavirus, White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany touted the use of the drug hydroxychloroquine earlier today as a treatment for COVID-19. That came one day after Dr. Anthony Fauci said the drug is not an effective treatment for the coronavirus. As for the president's war with Twitter, Mr. Trump just said a few moments ago that he would shut down the social media platform if he could do so legally. Obviously, he can't do that. And Wolf, he also said He's not about to delete his Twitter account. And getting back to the coronavirus task force, one thing we should point out, the task force did hold a meeting today, and White House officials say that task force is not going anywhere. But when you talk to administration sources about that task force, they say this task force is much less visible and much less busy, just not as active as it once was, Wolf.
Yeah, they're certainly not doing daily briefings for the news media and the American public. Jim Acosta,
that's right.
Thank you very much. Let's get some more on all of this. Joining us now, our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and our chief political correspondent, Dana Bash. Sanjay, cases of this virus, they're clearly rising across the South, and this new model predicts hospitalizations will actually tick up by mid-June. Could we actually soon see certain areas of the country go the other direction and shut back down?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a real concern, Wolf. If you look at four of the five states that have had greater than a 50% increase in overall infections, they're all states that have reopened early at the end of April or the beginning of May. And we may be seeing now the impact of that. More people out, more people getting exposed, and more people will get sick as a result. But that's going to be the real concern, Wolf, what you're raising. We know there's going to be more infections as you start to reopen. Will it surge and start to go into exponential growth in these places, which would then require possibly having to shut things down again? Will it keep at a sort of higher baseline level? We don't know yet, but it is concerning that we're starting to see the correlation between early reopening now and this increase in infections.
And we do know, Sanjay, that model that the White House Coronavirus Task Force relies on from the University of Washington Medical School is projecting, yes, 101,000 deaths so far over these past 3 months in the United States, but they're still projecting by early August, and that's not very far down the road, it could be more than 140,000 deaths in the United States. That's their assumption right now.
That's their assumption, and it constantly changes. I mean, these models are tough. You know, if you look at one point, that same model said there might be 60,000 people who would have died by the middle of August. And obviously, the number greatly surpassed that. So you got to take these models with a little bit of grain of salt. I think the big question here, Wolf, is that this isn't a bifurcated either you're open or you're shut in terms of these states. This almost is like a policy issue versus a people issue. The policy is these states are reopening. But if people are still being careful, maintaining physical distance, not having long interactions with people, which is defined as, you know, around 15 minutes, not being in enclosed spaces together, not gathering in large groups, all those things, that could make a significant difference. We now have evidence of that here in this country. There's evidence of it around the world. So if opening doesn't mean pre-March 16th, it could, you know, hopefully be a beneficial thing in terms of not letting these infections start to go into exponential growth.
And Dana, these new concerns come as the death toll clearly has now surpassed 100,000, 101,000 right now. But it took the president quite a while to make any comment at all on this very, very grim and sad milestone. What does that tell you?
It's not who he is. He did eventually put out a tweet and say exactly what a president should say. But it did take longer than perhaps it should have. And he didn't come out and make a statement. And that is kind of in keeping with the way that he and his administration, but particularly he, with his eye towards re-election, or he hopes re-election, is doing this now at a distance, at an arm's length. The time of him being on about this hour on a daily basis for sometimes 90 minutes to 2 hours, that seems like ancient history now because it backfired. He wanted to be a wartime president, and for a while he tried to do it. It didn't work because it backfired because of the statement that he made, and he never did it again. But there is a middle ground, and that is to be a leader, let Americans hear from the scientists, and to not stoke cultural differences when it comes to masks and other things, but he's not doing it.
All right, everybody stand by. Sanjay, Dana, we've got more news we're following. An important note, by the way, to our viewers. Join us, Sanjay Gupta and Anderson Cooper, later tonight for a CNN town hall, along with science writer David Quammen, author of the book Spillover, who says viruses like the coronavirus will keep happening. Coronavirus Facts and Fears, that airs later tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, only here on CNN. The breaking news continues next as we await a law enforcement news conference on the death of the unarmed African-American George Floyd in police custody. Plus, much more coming up on the coronavirus pandemic and a new estimate of the number of American lives it will claim. With the U.S. coronavirus death toll now over 101,000, a key model projects the number will grow by about one-third to about 132,000 dead Americans by early August. The doctor behind that model is joining us right now. Dr. Christopher Murray is the director of the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington Medical School. Dr. Murray, thanks so much for joining us. So the new death toll, it's a little bit less than the previous projection. Give us the information. Why are you projecting, what, about 10,000 fewer than, the, what, 143,000 that was projected only a few days ago?
Well, that was about a week ago. And the major difference here is that we've been expecting the upsurge in mobility that started at the end of April. We've seen it in the cell phone data and has continued all the way through May. We thought that would have translated into much more transmission of the virus by now. And we're seeing that in some states, but not most. And so it's a bit of a surprise that we haven't yet seen transmission take off. But there's new data now coming in on how people are behaving, you know, in terms of avoiding contact on their own, as well as wearing masks. And so that may be part of the story that's explaining the trends that we're seeing.
Because right now, 101,000 Americans have died over the past 3 months, and you're projecting, and this is your latest model, what, 132,000 deaths by August 4th. What do you make of this other model that we're getting from Columbia University predicting an uptick in hospitalizations by late June, a month from now?
Well, people forecasting an uptick is really being driven by the mobility numbers and also the trend that we're seeing in cases in a number of states. And so cases are definitely going up, as you mentioned earlier on the program, in the South and a number of other places. Part of that trend up, and it becomes very tricky to analyze, is that we're testing more. We're going in and testing nursing homes in some states. We're finding more cases. And what we're finding is that some of the states out there, Arkansas is an example, Florida is an example, the trend up in cases is probably a true indication of increased transmission, whereas in some states, the trend up in cases is probably because we're doing a better job testing. But when you take it all together, that's why we still see many deaths coming. And of course, we have to worry post this first wave. That's a different story. And I worry a lot that we're appropriately focused on the next few weeks, but this is going to be a long process, and we will start to have to worry about, you know, what's the toll going to be in the fall pretty soon.
Yeah, people are beginning to think they can go out, sit outside of a restaurant or go to a gym. They think it's almost over. This is far from over. This crisis, this awful pandemic, is going to continue for months by all accounts. And you also say, Dr. Murray, that the evidence shows masks probably give us, what, 50% protection against transmission? But how big of a difference would it make if more people wore masks when they're outside their homes, which, of course, has been the case in South Korea, for example, in Japan early on in February and March? They were all wearing, 99% of the people were wearing masks. We didn't start that till much, much later.
Well, you know, if somebody said there's a vaccine that protects you 50% from getting COVID, I think everybody would be cheering and a lot of people would be really wanting to get in line to get that vaccine. But we have something. We have something as effective as that. We have wearing masks. The analyses of published studies and also just the trends in the country of, you know, where people have been wearing masks versus not. All of that tells us that masks are effective, probably about 50% reduction. And so people should think of it like a vaccine. It's a powerful tool to protect yourself and protect your family. And we should all be trying to do it wherever possible.
Yes, we should. Is it too early, Dr. Murray, to have a sense of what the fall will look like, September, October, November?
You know, I think we are starting to be pretty worried about that. I think in the, you know, we crunch the numbers almost every night and we try to make sense of them. We're expanding our understanding of how people are responding. Because, you know, there's two drivers, Wolf, here of what happens. It's what the government does in terms of the mandates, and it's what we do as people wearing a mask, avoiding contact. Put all that together, and the third factor that is going to be the big issue in the fall is how much we expect transmission to go back up because of seasonality. If COVID's like pneumonia, which is the closest analogy that we think it's like, we should expect transmission to start to go back up in September and then really pick up speed towards January. And I think that's the part we need to get our thinking around is how do we prevent that? How do we prepare for those cities, those communities where transmission may tip over into exponential growth again? And what are we going to do when that happens?
So worrisome. All right, Dr. Murray, thanks for all the good work you and your team are doing out at the University of Washington. Thanks. Appreciate your joining us.
Sure. Thanks, Mark.
All right, so there's more breaking news we're following. We're going to go live to Minneapolis for the latest on the unrest sparked by the death of George Floyd, including a law enforcement news conference on the case. We're standing by for that. And we'll also have much more on the coronavirus pandemic, including the very disturbing upward trend of new cases in 16 U.S. states. We'll get back to our coverage of the coronavirus pandemic shortly, but there's more breaking news we're following. The Minnesota governor has just activated the National Guard amid protests over the death of George Floyd, the unarmed African-American man who died in police custody after an officer kneeled on his neck for at least 7 minutes. Our national correspondent, Miguel Marquez, is joining us right now. Miguel, I understand there's new unrest today. What's the latest there?
Yeah, look, there's several different areas around the around Minneapolis where unrest is breaking out or possible. That's why the governor has called out that the National Guard into this. We're also at the federal building here in Minneapolis. We expect to hear from the U.S. attorney, the FBI special agent in charge, and most importantly, the Hennepin County attorney, whose office it would be the one that would bring charges against one, two, or all of these officers.
A night of anger turns to rage. Protesters surrounding the Minneapolis Police Department's third precinct. Businesses nearby looted and burned.
I cannot allow criminal acts to occur and threaten the safety and also, again, compound the trauma that already exists.
The trauma from this arrest that left George Floyd dead. The video runs more than 7 minutes. Floyd pinned to the ground, a knee to his neck, unable to move or breathe.
Please, I can't breathe.
You can't see every vantage point, but the video doesn't come close to what police initially described, that Floyd was resisting. Surveillance video obtained by CNN from a nearby restaurant also doesn't show him resisting arrest. Donald Williams witnessed Floyd's brutal arrest.
His blood coming out of his nose, and I'm noticing it now at the point. His eyes just turned a different color, you know, and he's talking about his belly hurts, which is pretty much your last bowel movement in your life. And so that's when I started, you know, pleading with the officers.
Courtney Ross was Floyd's girlfriend.
This is nothing but an angel that was sent to us on earth. And we demonized him and we killed him. I just want to get on the phone and call my baby and hear his voice. He cannot die in vain. Can't.
The four police officers now all fired, many calling for them to face charges. The officer with his knee to Floyd's neck, Officer Derek Chauvin, had 18 complaints lodged against him. It's not clear what for. He was punished for two of them. Another of the officers was sued for excessive force in the past. That suit settled by the city.
Do you think that was murder?
I do.
You do?
I'm not a prosecutor, but let me be clear. The arresting officer killed someone.
With businesses looted and burned overnight, Floyd's friends and family are pleading for justice and calm.
I want, you know, everybody to be peaceful right now, but people are torn and hurt because they're tired of seeing black men die.
So the question is, what we saw last night, will there be a repeat of that? Has that energy been spent? It is not clear. There are several different hotspots right now where protesters are confronting police. It is not clear which way that will go right now. A lot will depend on this. We've been waiting for this press conference now for over an hour. They called it about 3 p.m. Central Time. It hasn't happened yet. But as soon as it does, we will bring it to you.
Yeah, the U.S. attorney is going to be there. The U.S. attorney from Minnesota, Erica McDonald, the FBI special agent in charge, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety commissioner, and the Hennepin County attorney. So lots of legal issues going on right now. Miguel, thank you very much. This morning on CNN's New Day, our political commentator, Bakari Sellers, had a very emotional reaction to the events in Minneapolis. Watch and listen to this.
I'm raising a son. I have no idea what to tell him. It's just, it's hard being black in this country when your life is not valued. And people are worried about the protesters and the looters. And it's just people who are frustrated, who for far too long have not had their voices heard. For those of us who have a mistrust of the system, it's very hard for us to do anything else other than just to cry this morning. And then hope and pray that we are not sitting next to Ben Crump one day. That's about all we can do.
Bakari is joining us right now. He's a former member of the South Carolina State Legislature. He's also the author of a very powerful, very important new book entitled My Vanishing Country, a Memoir. There you see the book cover right there. Looking forward to that book. I know it's going to be really, really a strong read. So, Bakari, what were you feeling in that moment, because it was so powerful, you got very emotional, and it's totally understandable.
Well, at that moment, I was thinking about being a father of black children in this country. At that moment, I was thinking about George laying down on the ground with a knee to the back of his neck. He couldn't breathe for 7-8 minutes, actually calling out for his mother. He was treated like a dog in the middle of the street, and those emotions, they well up. But I also want you to understand, Wolf, and I do think you get this, that it's not just one incident. It's not just George. It's not just Breonna. It's not just Ahmaud. But it's this continual pendulum of trauma that we have in this country that's inflicted upon people of color. And now we get a chance to see it with our own eyes. That video was devastating. That video was damning. And even more importantly, people always talk about, well, why don't you just comply? Why don't you listen? Well, he did all of those things, and he's still dead. And so now we have a life that it's lost. And for me, as a father of three beautiful brown children, the question that cracks me up, the question that makes me emotional is, what do I tell them? What do I teach them? And how do I raise them in a country where there is a large segment of the population who does not give them the benefit of their humanity? You can't tell me that those four officers, when they saw this man arrested, face down on the ground, calling out for his mother, you cannot tell me that they saw him as human. They saw him as something less than, simply because of the color of his skin. And so that fractures and shakes your faith to the point where you have to get emotional.
And what was so awful, Bakari, is that one police officer had his knee on this guy's throat, on his neck, George Floyd, and he was, you know, crying. He was not only calling for his mother, he kept saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. There were other three police officers standing with him. A lot of spectators, a lot of bystanders were saying, let him go, get off of him. And they didn't, and this guy didn't, and the other police officers didn't do anything. How do you explain that?
Well, I can't explain it. And to just compound it, you know, we talk about de-escalation policies. We talk about use of force policies. Well, none of that matters in this situation because the chokehold that was used is outlawed. It's banned. And they still did it anyway. But for just think about the position that I'm in as a black man in America, Wolf. Literally, all I have to do is go to my closet and dust off my T-shirt that I was wearing for Eric Garner that said, I can't breathe. And here we are again. You know, I tell people my father is 75, I'm 35, and we're having many of the same shared experiences. My father was shot in law enforcement. My father witnessed the Birmingham church bombing, the four little girls in Birmingham. He lived through Emmett Till. And see, now I have Ahmaud Arbery, I have Breonna Taylor, I have Clemente Pinckney, and the other eight individuals who were killed in the Charleston church massacre. And so we've made progress in this country, but we still have so far to go. And I think that's the troubling aspect of this whole thing.
You're absolutely right. Bakari, I want you to stand by. We're going to continue this conversation. We're watching what's going on this issue. We're standing by for that news conference from the law enforcement authorities. We're also standing by for more news on the coronavirus pandemic. We're going to have some of the top headlines coming in right now from around the world. Latin America, now the global epicenter for the coronavirus cases. Stand by. We'll have an update from the worst hit country. We're talking about Brazil. And later, how science differs from what President Trump is saying about mask wear.
See exactly what we're doing.
In global coronavirus headlines, new cases and deaths are surging across Latin America, especially in Brazil. Let's go to CNN's Nick Payton Walsh. He's in Rio de Janeiro for us. Nick, what's the latest?
Wolf, Brazil's troubles continue to mount, with the IMF predicting that their economy will shrink by 5.3% at the end of the year. And this may be behind an extraordinary move taken by the biggest and wealthiest city, Sao Paulo, also the hotbed of coronavirus. They, according to doctors we spoke to there, are about a week to 2 weeks away from the peak, but already the mayor of that city is telling non-essential businesses that if they submit a plan for reopening, they can potentially in the weeks ahead. All about the pressure on the economy here and balancing that with public health. But really, Sao Paulo, so poorly affected in its hospitals there, about 92% bed occupancy. Real concerns about what that will mean as the virus peaks in the week or so ahead, Wolf.
Nick Payton Walsh on the scene for us. Thank you. And not only has the coronavirus pandemic hurt relations between the U.S. and China, now the Chinese are moving forward with what appears to be a crackdown on the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong. CNN's David Culver is on the scene for us. David, tell us more.
Wolf, China moving forward with the highly controversial national security law. The country's rubber stamp legislature passing a decision Thursday to enact the law. It's likely to take a couple of months to write up the precise language and put it into effect. But there is already a lot of concern and fear that this will forever change Hong Kong. China's been a bit vague, saying it's going to safeguard rights and prevent foreign interference, which they in part blame for the months of protests that marked the back half of 2019. But some believe it will give China's state security ministry access to patrol Hong Kong. China stresses it's to stop the chaos and protect sovereign territory. Critics, including the U.S., U.K., Canada, and Australia, calling it in a joint statement an unprecedented move, and they warn it will erode the territory's autonomy and that it could lead to the U.S. ending Hong Kong's special trade status or harsher sanctions against China, which Chinese officials have said will be met with countermeasures. Wolf.
David Culver in Shanghai, thank you. Coming up, President Trump's latest stance on mask wearing and how it measures with real science. Against the advice of his own top health officials, President Trump continues to question the use of masks to prevent the spread of coronavirus and refuses to wear one himself in public. CNN's Brian Todd is working the story for us. Brian, the science behind wearing a mask is very clear.
It is very clear, Wolf. You know, tonight, public officials in the U.S., aside from Trump, officials like New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, are trying to change America's culture regarding mask wearing. But this does come as President Trump continues to send out messaging on masks, which health experts say is misleading and dangerous.
Tonight, President Trump is seemingly compelled to weigh in on or spark a debate over mask wearing. The president tweeting today so many different viewpoints, while retweeting an article on a conservative website suggesting that wearing masks or rules on wearing masks put us on a path to the government controlling more of our lives. But while the president claims there are, quote, many different viewpoints on mask wearing, real experts are boiling it down.
There's only really one scientific viewpoint here, which is masks work. They work to protect me. They work to protect you.
We now have really clear evidence that wearing masks works. It's probably a 50% protection against transmission. And so it, you know, what happens in the next month or two is very much in the hands of how people respond.
Infectious disease experts lay out the science simply. People carrying the virus, whether they're symptomatic or not, emit droplets of the virus in every instant where they breathe, talk, yell, or sing.
Me speaking right now, I'm generating droplets. If I were wearing a mask, those would not come out very far, and there would not be nearly as many droplets generated.
But experts say masks are also good defensive tools.
So cloth masks don't just protect other people, they can also protect you, just not to the same degree. And they're not as protective as an N95 mask, which is what we wear in the hospital.
But the president continues to refuse to wear masks in public settings, even while members of his own family wear them just a few feet away.
I just don't want to wear one myself. It's a recommendation. They recommend it. I'm feeling good. I just don't want to be doing, I don't know, somehow sitting in the Oval Office behind that beautiful Resolute desk, the great Resolute desk. I think wearing a face mask as I greet presidents, prime ministers, dictators, kings, queens, I don't know, somehow I don't see it for myself.
And he continues to fuel a rejection of the practice among the public.
I mean, if he's not wearing a mask, I'm not going to wear a mask. If he's not worried, I'm not worried.
The president.
Yes, sir.
Experts say that's flat out damaging to public health, a message other officials are trying to counter. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo today authorizing businesses in New York to deny entry to people who don't wear face coverings.
We have to culturalize the masks. We have to customize the masks for New York to get New Yorkers to wear them.
A culture which didn't exist in New York City before this pandemic, but which did exist in Hong Kong. The two cities are very similar, bustling, packed in, with more than 7 million residents each. But Hong Kong's death toll from coronavirus is dramatically lower because experts say millions of citizens there started wearing masks right when the outbreak began.
The government didn't even have to ask them to do this, but by wearing masks, they were able to cut the degree of transmission in the city dramatically and save lives.
Tonight, health experts are hoping for a cultural sea change regarding wearing masks here in the United States, but that message is certainly not coming from the White House tonight. Wolf?
Ryan Todd reporting for us. Thanks very much.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.